Hey, is this thing on? Oh, it is? Word. You are now listening to Lecture Hall, brought to you by StudentUnionSports.com.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Sorry I'm late. It's just like this new schedule's totally confusing.
Infiltrate the dealers, find the supply.
We get to be brothers?
Infiltrate the dealers, find the supply.
I am a peacock! You gotta let me fly!
Hey, Greg, why don't you go piss your pants again?
That was like 8 years ago, asshole.
Now you're all in big trouble.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Lecture Hall. We got bragging rights on the line in this episode. Currently 16, just under 17 minutes to play in a tie ball game in Mackey Arena between my Wisconsin Badgers and Harry's Purdue Boilermakers. So we're going to have our eyes on that one, but we got another jam-packed show. What else is new? I'm excited, Harry. I hope you are too. That was a nice rhyme. Harry, hit me with that syllabus, boy.
What's up, guys? Class is in session. Last week, or maybe it was even 2 weeks ago at this point, we were talking about J.J. Watt and, you know, the best fits for him. And, you know, he just went to a team that no one expected. He announced via his own Twitter source was him, can confirm that he was announced as signing with the Arizona Cardinals, which honestly, at his age, the weather, former teammate DeAndre Hopkins.
What is he, 65?
I mean, 60, like 30 is the new 65 in the NFL. So he can play the rest of his career out in Phoenix. Not a bad gig. And it's a team that's going to be fun. Like, they might not be Super Bowl contenders this year, but they'd certainly have the pieces to build around and do some things in the future. That's going to be a fun team for J.J. Watt. And I don't care how old they are, him and Chandler Jones on defense, dynamic duo.
It'll be interesting to see. I'm excited to, you know, I love the memes, you know, if you weren't here when we were 8-8, don't be there when we go 8-8-1, you know, stuff like that. Those classic memes are always good ones. So it'll be interesting to see how that team now works out. You know, now they're going to get rid of a guy like Reddick. Also on that D-line, who's much younger, probably much more worth the cost of the potential money, seeing as how JJ's career has played out with injuries. But you can't hate the game. Don't hate the game, or don't hate the play, hate the game. So we'll see what happens with JJ.
Just hearing you talk, I was just thinking, if we had a lecture hall drinking game, I think one of the cues has to be take a shot every time Hoppe says it's going to be interesting.
I have my Truly right here, so I guess I may as well, huh? That would be an interesting game. We'll take another. Do so safely at homes. Do so responsibly, kids.
Yeah, and then in other NFL news, it seems like every week we've got a freaking quarterback or prominent player somewhere seemingly requesting a trade. And Russell Wilson said he didn't request a trade, but if he were to get traded, there's a list of teams that he would accept a trade to, being Dallas, Oakland, Chicago, and Washington?
The Dolphins.
Oh, yeah, Miami. So Russell Wilson potentially on the move, a decision that would make absolutely zero sense if you're the Seattle Seahawks, your Super Bowl winning quarterback. What were you, 12-4 last year with literally like nothing around you? I don't know if trading Russell Wilson makes you any better. I don't think there's a return you can get for Russell Wilson that puts you in a better position than you are by keeping Russell Wilson. So just, I don't know, the idea of trading him, I feel like you keep him and you do something to give him an offensive line, because I don't know what else you'd want on offense with DK and Tyler Lockett. You're not going to get much better. Plus Chris Carson in the backfield, maybe give him an O-line and give him a little time. I don't think trading Russell Wilson does anything for the Seahawks except make them
stock of the league and cap space. That's all you really get out of that. I just love the way that it was put, how Wilson's agent was like, he's not requesting a trade, but like, hey, I'm not a millionaire, but like, what, like, what are we doing here? Like, that was a terrible example, don't get me wrong, but that, like,
done better.
I absolutely could have, but I just don't understand where this isn't a trade. This isn't a trade, but a demand or anything. But just in case, here's my list of very specific places. It's not like, you know, here or here would be like interesting. That doesn't count. But this is me as Russell Wilson. It's not me saying that time. You know, he didn't just like go out and about around, you know, he literally just gave like, this is where it would be.
Yes.
Yeah. So
it was like walking up to the hottest girl in school and being like, I'm not asking you out, but if I were to ask you to go to dinner with me Saturday night, would you say yes?
And then, yeah. And then when she says no,
it's like, good, because I wasn't asking you out in the first place.
Yeah. Joke's on you. Already had plans.
Have fun sitting at home by yourself, loser.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing stuff.
So, if Russell,
like, just what a terrible, like, the immediate PR, especially because Russ is so squeaky clean. Like, for his agent to be like, oh, he wasn't requesting a trade. Like, for him to feel like he had to protect something of Russ's. After his comments, it's just like, what are we doing here, guys? Like, come on now.
Oh my gosh. So I guess if he were to get traded, which he's not requesting the trade, but if he were to request a trade, he has four teams that he would only accept. Which of those four teams do you think would be the best fit for Russell Wilson? And where does he go and make that team immediate Super Bowl contenders?
People aren't going to like this, but the answer is Miami. And despite not having maybe the offensive talent, they had a guy in Myles Gaskin last year who was pretty good for the most part in the backfield when he was healthy. Not great for the receiver aspect, but they have a top three pick that could be a Devonta Smith. Now, the question that you're going to have to figure out is, what is the price for Russell Wilson? And can we keep a lot of that awesome defensive secondary together and that awesome, just that awesome defense in general? Obviously, they cut Kyle Van Noy's money. He was released today. So from there, you have to wonder what their next move is. Are they opening up cap space for a reason, or are they – like to make a move, or are they just getting rid of cap space to maybe get a high profile free agent later on?
I don't know if you are going to have the same opinion as me here, but I think if you're the Chicago Bears, you have to do whatever it takes to land Russell Wilson. He's a proven winner. He didn't have anything on this Seattle team, and they went 12-4. If you put Russell Wilson in the Chicago Bears system, they've got the defense. They've got Allen Robinson, Tariq Cohen, David Montgomery. He's got plenty of talent around him. If you're the Bears, you have to go get Russell Wilson. He's not like Deshaun Watson. He's not like Matthew Stafford. He wins. No matter what.
Yeah. So you're saying he's going to go to the Bears? Or that would be the best spot.
that may be the voice of John Z, but that is also an opinion that I do share, that I think if you put Russell Wilson on the Chicago Bears roster, that they are significantly better. They made the playoffs at 8-8 or whatever it was with a Mitch Nick Foles duo, and they've made the playoffs with Mitch at like – what were they, like 11-5? Were they 12-4?
I don't remember.
I think they do have enough talent to where if they did get Russ, that they could make some noise, especially in an NFC North that isn't super strong. With the Lions are tanking, the Vikings had one of the worst defenses in the league last year. I mean, the Packers are the Packers, but I mean, the Bears have already won that division once in recent history with the Packers in it, with Aaron Rodgers still in the league. So I think there's a lot of noise that could be made in Chicago if they were able to pull off a trade for Russell Wilson. Do they have the front office with the brain capacity to combine a deal like that that's not going to implode the team? that's yet to be determined. But hypothetically, if they could do it by only giving up picks, I think that's probably the best spot for him. The Dallas thing doesn't make sense to me. When you have a quarterback that's just as good and then younger in Dak Prescott, he is coming off injury. But I don't think trading, not paying Dak to send him to Seattle to acquire Russell Wilson doesn't make any sense to me when that team is still going to have the same problems that Dak couldn't win with. And honestly, their offensive line is worse than Seattle's, and that puts Russ in that pretty much the same situation that he's trying to escape from.
Yeah. If he goes to Dallas, you're not necessarily getting any better. That just doesn't make sense. What that means is that's a big Jerry Jones move. That's like a classic situation for him. That being said, I don't know if the Bears can cultivate the talent around him, albeit pretty much established already. I just don't know if they would be able to use him correctly, if that makes sense, or at least like be able to scheme around him, because he does have a specific game. He does have a specific ability. And we saw the whole let Russ cook thing. I don't know if it's necessarily better off for you to let Russ cook, but I don't know, maybe get him behind that line that's at least a little bit better, and see if he can win you some ball games. They've been going 8-8 for the last couple handful of years now. Why not? But the question always comes to, can you keep a core there without giving up too much to still remain good enough, at least defensively or anyway else?
And I mean, that's a fair point. I think there's still just a lot of talent around him that if they were to get him, that they'd be able to make it work, even though I feel like it'd be a slightly worse offensive situation than it would be than he'd have in Seattle, where like Allen Robinson's good, but it's not Allen Robinson and like a Tyler Lockett or and a DK Metcalf. And then Chris Carson is miles better than Cohen or Montgomery. So I think he's taking a step back in Chicago when it comes to offensive weapons, but he's getting a better defense and a better offensive line, which I think kind of helps offset having less talented weapons on offense. Because in Seattle, he has to have those kind of weapons or he gets nothing done because he is running for his life every play. I also
he's the most sacked quarterback in the last like 4 years. I that Wentz stat. So it was that I saw it shortly thereafter. What was that? A couple weeks ago. That was just before Wentz was traded. That the only quarterback sacked more in Wentz's career, so since 2016, I want to say, was Russ with like 3 or 4, or it was maybe it was like even 10 more sacks in that amount of time.
Yeah, and Seattle, if your front office is listening to this podcast, take it from me as a fan of a team who had a generational talent at quarterback who got sacked entirely too much and is now retired and out of the game of football because he got hit so many times that his body shut down on him and then he grew to hate the game because he couldn't function like a normal human being. You don't want that happening to your quarterback. It might be working so far, but eventually Russ is going to tear his ACL or destroy his shoulder or break his neck or something if you just let him get blown up every single play, especially now that you have JJ Watt in your division. I mean, come on, guys, make the right move here. Invest in an offensive line. Don't just trade out your quarterback because you don't want to protect him.
Yeah, last thing I'll say on this is Van Noy. It sounds like they're trying to find a trading partner for him rather than a specific release after they signed that big extension with him. Could be an interesting scenario if maybe Tua for Russ could be an option.
I still think that's a horrible trade.
Not just straight up, but Van Noy, Tua for Russ, and then whatever else happened.
I mean, maybe. I just don't think there's a possible trade combination that Seattle can pull the trigger on and get better.
I agree. I mean, especially with where he wants to go, Oakland might be a different scenario since they were a part of it, but only time can tell now. I really don't think – I think Seattle might be in – they need to keep this team together because there's going to come a time very soon where they're going to be really bad for like 2 or 3 years, in my personal opinion. They've just – they have this core. They obviously have this toxic culture. The story came out where Russ like walked out of a team meeting during the season, apparently, like a pregame meeting or a Thursday meeting. So I think Seattle could really hurt themselves rather shortly.
Papa, why don't you tell them about our friends over at Gibbs Grooming?
Oh, I would love to tell the folks about Gibbs Grooming. Gibbs, I'm all clean shaven, but hey, guess what? It's coming back. The fuzz is coming back on the face. It's winter. We still got to try and keep warm, so we're going to grow this beard out. We got to get it looking nice and purdy. How we're going to do that is using the code HALL15, H-A-L-L-1-5, HALL15, for 15% off at GibbsGrooming.com, G-I-B-S-G-R-O-O-M-I-N-G, GibbsGrooming.com for 15% off to make your beard look nice and lush. They have other great things as well. Not only is it the beard oils, the 3-in-1 body wash, not the one, not the two, but the 3-in-1 beard, hair, and body wash, the biofuel conditioner, and plenty of other fantastic products for men, women, whoever you may need them for. Hall 15, H-A-L-L-1-5, Hall 15 for 15% off at GibbsGrooming.com. So we have a very interesting topic that I would like to get to. Me being a baseball guy, I'm wearing my Brewer shirt, spring training. We have Kevin Mather, the president of baseball ops for the Seattle Mariners. Now, he is at the Bellevue Washington Rotary Club. So, you know, basically just a bunch of rich old business owners in Washington getting together. And this man is spouting off about his team contracts, who's going to be on the team next year, this, that, the other. And essentially lets out to the world the business side of baseball. And now we know about this business side of baseball. And I think we've all come to understand it for the most part, come to try to slowly work it back into the player's favor. And while trying to do this video of Mather comes out where he basically talks about manipulating player service time and other things like that are absolutely terrible. You know, controlling a player for basically exploiting players. Now, baseball is a game that has had its roots dug in, and obviously it's just so frustrating. Like, there's so many things I want to say. The game's roots, depending on who you are, come from the Civil War, where one side fought against slavery and essentially another one for. And we've come to the point in baseball where we basically have people taking other people as human commodities and manipulating them to work for them longer and not pay them as well. And while I draw that comparison, and you might say, what do you mean? Specifically Jared Kelenic of the Mariners and what Kevin Mather was saying to this Rotary Club, which is still an insane move about manipulating his service time, is basically, if you don't understand how contracts work in the MLB, basically you're under that team's control. You're getting paid to drive on a crappy bus, you know, through single A, through double A, through triple A, you know, hardly making more than, you know, an insurance man, anybody in a cubicle. And you're playing in terrible conditions to chase your ultimate dream of becoming a Major League Baseball player. Once you get to the MLB, a team essentially controls you for 6 years. And they pretty much get the say. You go to arbitration. And if you don't understand the arbitration, basically what happens is a team presents all the cases of why you suck as a player, why you're not worth what you think you're worth, why your agent doesn't think you're worth what you're worth, why you are a bottom of the barrel piece of shit human being. essentially is what is how these things go. So not only for your first 6 years, you know, maybe your mid 20s to your early 30s, maybe you're somebody who's very good and you're late teens to your mid 20s and you get to peak years and you can finally reach a new height. But basically what he had said, it was just that, and the way to manipulate players to not pay them as much, among many, many other things. But it's really sad to see the way that the game started and how it has, how we think of the game, you know, baseball, apple pie, this is America. It's pretty sad when you consider the underlying tones that I just laid out for you. I don't know if you saw the video, Harry, but yeah.
Yeah, I did see the video, and honestly, I don't even think that was the worst part of his whole little speech there. I thought it was even more shocking, and I thought this was the direction you were going to take this at first, was, every time he talked about a foreign player, he had to comment on how poor their English was.
Yes. Look at the tones. Sorry, I didn't mean to explode, but...
Talking about one specific Japanese player, I can't remember his name, who... played for the Mariners. Now they wanted to bring him back as like their director of scouting in Japan and in Asia. They wanted to bring him back, but then he was like complaining about how they had to pay him X, which was setting it up. You had to pay him X, you had to pay his translator Y or Z or whatever. But he went, we have to pay him X and we have to pay his translator $75,000, as if $75,000 is like a number that's just like killing him inside, that we have to pay this guy instead of just letting this dude speak English. Like, and once we told him that, he started speaking English a lot better. It's like,
yeah,
it's like, what, like some people just aren't going to speak English. Like, it, like the world doesn't revolve around the United States as much as we want to think that it does. Like, some people, more than likely people from Japan, they're going to speak Japanese, and like, you just can't expect them to speak fluent English. It's like, translators have a job because they need to translate. And like,
yeah,
you want to keep the economy going during a global pandemic, is you let this one guy have his job as a translator. It's like, I don't
absolutely,
it's just part of life. Like, that's, and people in baseball, you just have to have translators for them. Like, baseball is one of the only sports, professional sports, that scouts worldwide. I guess the NBA does to an extent, but not to the extent that Major League Baseball does.
Yes, certainly not as established as what the MLB has had for years. You know, Japan, Korea, Taiwan, China, et cetera. And obviously this summer, We've had like the Australian league gets a little bit more shine. There's plenty of professional leagues in other countries. So the undertones of racism, and not even undertones, I mean, honestly, it's pretty blatant racism that stems from America's game. If I'm being totally like, if you want to be just true about it, like, it was just extremely disheartening to see a baseball executive have such a I don't want to even call it disheartening, because that's not the word I'm looking for, but
you've already used that word like three times.
Yeah, that too. but just a terrible way to represent our game and all that kind of stuff. It was just so appalling, I think is more the word that I'm looking for. He's just blatantly spitting this out in front of the Rotary Club. Like, what are we doing here? You're just going to be spitting this out? I'm glad that this is now caught on tape. He's obviously since stepped down on all that stuff, but just no place in our game, and really makes you think about all the players who through arbitration have just been screwed through what that process is professionally. And if you want to hear even better and more well put, in better words, our friend Dallas Brayton, who was on with us about a month ago now, I believe now two episodes ago of Starting Nine, gives a pretty good description of what it actually, you know, how the business and can describe everything a lot better than I can, but that's the gist.
Yeah, I would have loved to be just like observing this Rotary Club meeting just to see how they're like reacting to him, to see if they're just like, hell yeah, don't pay this guy $75,000. Like, he wants to be in America, speak English. Like, I want to know if there's like that kind of reaction to this, or like being on the West Coast, like you usually think like West Coast liberals, it's like, that's something that probably doesn't fly out there. Maybe I want to know if they were like uncomfortable in their chairs, or if they were like ready to rally or something. Like, I want to know what the heck was going on. And then going on to the into the service time stuff, it's like, baseball is the best sport, but it's also like the dumbest possible sport we have, and it's its own worst enemy. It has like these like traditions and unwritten rules, and the way that they go about contracts and everything is ridiculous. It's like, there's nothing straightforward about baseball. And the second you think you understand something, there's just like a next step to it. And like, arbitration is the dumbest thing of all time.
Yeah.
It's like, what other sport are you under contract for so long, but then so many years into your contract, you have to like fight to get more money, and then like you can just get belittled by your employer and argue, and then you have to face like a judge who says like, oh, I think you're right on this one, you're gonna make X amount. Like, it's the dumbest thing ever. Like, that doesn't happen in the NBA, it doesn't happen in NHL, it doesn't happen in the NFL. It doesn't happen anywhere. It's so stupid. But you see teams like use the service time thing to their advantage all the time, and like I think the most noticeable one was like Chris Bryant with the Cubs, just because like it's so noticeable, just because of how good Chris Bryant was immediately when he came up, and they like continually held him down so they could get an extra year out of him, and now they're just, the Cubs are like, we can't wait to get rid of this guy.
Yeah, the most messed up part is like, to get this extra year. Okay, I get that. Like, if it was like a team option or something, but to get an extra year of, we're going to go sit in this mediation room and dictate and determine how much you're going to get paid because we don't want to fork it over. Like, how fucking messed up is that? Like, it is so frustrating. Like I said, is we think of baseball as, you know, it's America's pastime, you know, regardless of football being the more popular sport, basketball also being a more popular sport. We think of America's pastime as baseball, you know, nothing more American than apple pie baseball, and that's pretty much it. So it's really tough to see patriotism the way it is formed, and then how it is applied to our game. And then see continual undertones of racism, and pretty blatant racism, and controlling players in a way. It's a hard thing to comprehend when you think of what America's pastime means, and then you think of the way that it has been ingrained in our culture. So sad to see, sad to hear, and to share it with the Bellevue Rotary Club, even worse. You know, we like to bet our fair share of sports here at Student Union Sports, but it isn't always easy to find a reputable source to place a bet. At Student Union Sports, we are big fans of BUSR.com. Partnership alert! BUSR is your go-to location for all sports betting and online gaming. Bet on your favorite sports events today, including the NFL, biggest winners and losers, NBA, college football, even college basketball, and many other sports. If you're into betting the ponies, BUSR also offers the best promos, bonuses, and odds of any online racebook. If you think you're a savvy sports bettor, BUSR is the place to go. If you go and head on over to BUSR.com/studentunionsports today, you will receive 20% on your sign-up bonus and up to 8% in rebates every single day. Again, that's BUSR.com/studentunionsports. You can also find that link in the bio of our podcast, plus on the front pages of our website and Twitter. Go to BUSR.com/studentunionsports today to start your betting. Harry, I want to turn your attention now to the beautiful sport of college basketball. We had a great game earlier this afternoon in Baylor, West Virginia. Illinois absolutely destroyed Michigan. Two huge ranked matchups, 3 versus 6 and 2 versus 4. I mean, this is March. It's March Madness time, baby. How do you feel?
Yeah, last time I checked, today is March 2nd. So it is March Madness time. I'm excited. I mean, it's been literally almost 2 years now since our last March Madness. That would be correct. So we're due for a good one, and it looks like we're getting it. I mean, we saw honestly like Final Four caliber games this afternoon in West Virginia, Baylor, and Michigan, Illinois. And Illinois mollywops Michigan without Io, without their best player. So it's like, I don't know, like you say, anything can happen in March, especially in a conference as loaded as the Big Ten, where your 14 team can give your one team all they can handle. It's like top to bottom, the best conference in college basketball. It is basically every year. This year, better than most. And then you have Baylor, West Virginia, a West Virginia team that's sneaky good. I don't think they get talked about that much for being, what were they, like 8th? They were 8, 10, something like that?
Prior to this week, yeah, they were 10th. Now they went up to 6.
Yeah, 6. So the 6-3. And honestly, Baylor's only a 3 because of that shutdown. And they kind of, I think they came back from their little COVID break a little too soon. Like if you paid attention to how Michigan did it, they took a couple extra days, had a couple extra practices, and really made sure they were ready before they came back and tried to play. I think Baylor.
Yeah. And then they were down 12 at halftime to the Badgers, and then they came back and won. So
yeah. And then they came back and won. They got it figured out. I think Baylor needed a little more time. They looked very sloppy against Iowa State. They came back and won before ultimately taking their first loss of the season. And then, I mean, West Virginia, Press Virginia, gave them all they could handle today. Honestly, I mean, that Michigan-Ohio State game has an argument for best game of the year, at least regular season game of the year. I think this one might have actually took it. If you watched it down the stretch, no one could miss a shot. It was every time down the court, make. It was a crazy finish just to get it to overtime. It was an insane basketball game. It's like, we're only getting started. It's only March 2nd. We're not even in the conference tournaments yet. And we're not even really close to the NCAA tournament yet.
No, there's still 2 weekends left. Some of the smaller conferences have started their conference championships, but you have Gonzaga, Michigan, Baylor, Illinois, Iowa, West Virginia, Ohio State, Alabama, Houston, and Villanova. Gonzaga and Baylor, yes, have pretty much been up there. Iowa, yes, for the most part. But teams that really weren't, I don't know that you were going to put them in the top 10. Like a majority of that top 10 are teams that are like, have been pretty much surprising. I mean, Michigan, for what it's worth, I'm pretty sure started the season unranked and now have played very well, only one loss. And I mean, even just outside of that, Florida State, Arkansas, Kentucky, Creighton, Texas, Oklahoma State, who is now 1-2 straight over Oklahoma, Texas Tech, San Diego State, Loyola. Rounding it out, it's Virginia, Vatech, Purdue, Colorado, Wisconsin. Obviously, these things are going to change, and pretty much in a week or so, the AP poll and these polls are going to be just about useless as resumes are almost filled out as we get closer to automatic bids. But I mean, this has been a season that has thankfully gotten around COVID and has supplied some teams that, I mean maybe. I don't know. Alabama, Arkansas. I mean, I don't know that you saw those two teams as top 12 teams before the season and until, honestly, as of late. So just what a spectacular season. I want to know, you get outside that top 5. Who's your dark horse?
I was literally about to ask you the same question. If you had to pick a team to make a run outside the top 5, who would it be? That's crazy that we were on the same wavelength here. I mean, I think, though, the one staring you right in the face is Ohio State sitting at 7, just because they were, like, the third best team in the country, like, 2 weeks ago. but then again, like, it's hard to tell, really, who is, like, that good in the Big Ten, because they're all so good and they all beat each other. Like, I think, what is it, Iowa just kind of mollywopped Ohio State, Michigan beat Ohio State, and then Illinois mollywops Michigan. And then Michigan, like, destroys Iowa. Or no, Iowa beat Michigan, didn't they? I don't even know.
You better be careful. You might start a fire with all those gears turning in that head of yours.
Did Iowa beat Michigan, or did they get destroyed by Michigan?
Iowa, let's see here. Let me pull it up, because Michigan absolutely beat them by 22.
Yeah, yep, that was it. Yeah.
But then the next game, Iowa goes to Ohio State and won by 16 over Ohio State.
It's like all of these teams here in the Big Ten in the top 10. It's just like, which one of them is really the best team in the conference? I don't know. But I mean, if you're saying specifically outside of the top five, I think Ohio State's the first one you have to look at, even though there's two teams that I really like, one being just under Ohio State and Alabama. Alabama was flirting with that one seed a little earlier in the season. I think they're really good. I really like how they play. That sounds like the most I don't watch college basketball thing ever, saying like how they play. And then I also really like Creighton. And I know like Creighton's kind of had some tough losses, but they've also played some good teams and lost close ones. They're sitting at 14. They're sitting just under Kansas, and Kansas is having a down year by Kansas standards. I think Creighton's really tough, especially coming from a Big East conference that's not that good, but not that bad. They're just kind of okay compared to how they've been in years past. I also really like Creighton. I think they're probably my biggest like dark horse Final Four team at this point. But then if you go back to our preseason predictions, I had Oklahoma State in my Final Four, and they have been on fire as of late. Cade Cunningham has been unstoppable.
That guy is awesome. Cade Cunningham is awesome, dude.
Taking a line out of the Hoppe book. It's going to be really interesting.
Thank you.
Come tournament time, just seeing where all these teams that I think are really good and can make a run, where they get matched up, who they're playing first round, who would their potential second round matchup be. I can't wait for it.
I'm on the same page. I love March Madness. If you know me, March Madness is my thing. And what I mean, there's not much more to say beyond that. I will say my dark horse team that's going to be outside of this top five currently.
It's Loyola Chicago.
No, it's Florida State. The reason I really like Florida State is most of these other teams have already played 20, 25 games. Florida State's only played 18 games. They played really well. They just gave Leonard Hamilton an extension. This guy is a great coach. He's been cultivating really good talent for a really long time at a really high level. And Florida State's that team. They're always in the Sweet 16, man. If you go back, I bet you Sweet 16, Elite Eights, they have more than you realize in the last five to 10 years. So I think Florida State is going to sneak up on people. They're extremely deep again this season, as they were last year, and obviously didn't get a chance to prove that. And I'm going to make the mistake, but Oklahoma State, man, Cade Cunningham, what he brings to the table is just so awesome. You need good guard play in March. You're going to get it with Cade Cunningham. The team as a whole is pretty deep. And I mean, they beat an Oklahoma team that was just ranked inside the top 10 as well. Back-to-back games over a 3-day stretch, 2 games in 3 days. And granted, they were close games, but dropped 40 in one, only had 15 in the second one, but proved to be he could do both the scoring and being do the teammate type stuff, play the defense, pass the ball, etc. So this is March. We're here now. Let's take a deep breath. I don't know if you know this, but there's going to be a college basketball tournament.
Really?
Yeah, dude, it's happening for real.
Fans will be in attendance. So what a world. What a world we live in.
Yeah, I'm not just yanking your old Yankee Doodle here, your chain here, but we got a tournament coming up. We got conference tournament. We got March drama on deck, and I'm excited. But
speaking of drama, this Purdue Wisconsin game.
Full of it, right?
5 minutes left. Purdue's got a 4-point lead. You might be ahead of me, but maybe we're not.
Did somebody just miss a three?
Rebound and get fouled?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. We're okay. We're on the same page.
Wow, interesting streaming speeds.
All right. Speaking of a bunch of guys wearing red, PGA Tour this weekend
was at
the concession in Florida. I know we talked last week about the Tony Finau top 10 bet, and you know, I suggested that might be a bad beat now that you're trying to take advantage of a statistic like that, and Tony comes out with a solid 14th place finish. Hoppe, thoughts?
If you listen to last week's episode, you heard me say in there, kind of squeaked it in, that I responsibly placed $50 on a Tony Finau top 10 at plus 125. Tony Finau was in the top 10 after 18 holes, after 36 holes, after 54 holes. He comes out on Sunday, and on the second hole, triple bogeys. This man triple bogeys, and he comes back, and then hit on the back nine, he shoots a one over on 37, I think, on the back nine. It might be a one over 36 there at concession, but shoots one over on the back nine and was one spot out of a top 10 finish. Yeah. So, yeah, bad beat.
What did you think of the course in general? The place was brutal. Like, it was a tough golf course.
It was disgusting. I would have shot a 200. So I guess I like triple bogey. It would have been like my average hole probably.
Yeah. That would have been your personal par on every hole. It's just like, all right, can we make triple here?
Yeah. Can we triple here is the question. And probably not is the answer. But when you're a professional and you bet on a professional responsibly, of course, it hurt. It hurt a lot. I'm not going to lie to you.
I heard a little before we keep on with the WGC at the concession. I heard a little birdie tell me that you had a little action going on in Puerto Rico as well. Did that work? I know that didn't work out for you. But
no. Lucas Glover. 18 holes, top 10. 36 holes, still in the top 10. 54 holes in the top 15. I needed a win. He was close. He was pretty much three shots back the whole time, and then he fell off Saturday and Sunday, which really stunk. But we are where we are. And if you can't tell, both of us are stressing out over this Purdue-Wisconsin game very hard. The same way I stressed out over a top Tony Finau. Let's go! A Tony Finau top 10. Brad Davison for three. Is this going to turn into play-by-play of that people will already have been able to watch and then go back? And
let's go, Zach Edey. Body him up.
Damn Michael Potter. He's so soft.
Yeah, let's not turn this into play-by-play. 24 hours in advance, you get the play-by-play to the last 5 minutes of the Wisconsin game.
Yeah, last 2:45 really ticking down here.
By the time you're listening to this, you'll already know who.
I'm really mad because you're just ahead of me.
We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. This is huge. You're just ahead of me too, so I'd prefer.
Oh, no, Bob.
Oh, let's go! Offensive boards! Somebody's down, if you couldn't tell by the silence.
All right, back to...
Speaking of down, my pocketbook after this weekend's bad beats between the two golf tournaments.
Back to the concession. It was won by Colin Morikawa, one of our favorite guys on tour, Young Gun, on Sunday.
I mean, the waterworks. How are they not flowing, dude? I mean, come on.
I mean, that post-game interview was really something. It starts with the whole, you know, Tiger car crash last week. Pretty much, I'd say probably half the tour was wearing Tiger red and black on Sunday. In tribute, all the Nike guys were doing it. Some other guys were doing it that weren't Nike, that they just did it because, you know, it's Tiger bleeping Woods.
And who was it that had the red with the white stripe? Because that guy, like, who was that?
It was JT.
Was that JT? Oh, my God, dude, that was bad. Because it wasn't like it was that was bad.
I remember one Sunday, though, Tiger showed up in a red and white striped shirt like that? And people were like, Sunday pink? Because it looked pink. And someone asked him about it. And Tiger goes, what color do I wear on Sundays? And they're like, red. And he was like, exactly. And then, and then that was the end of it.
Maybe in that context, but I was like, because I saw the pictures and I was like, all of a sudden this is this dude with red and white stripes. I was like, whoever that guy sponsors hates him, which now that I know it's JT.
That guy doesn't have a sponsor.
The guy doesn't have, yeah.
They did hate
him. Yeah, that's tough. But yeah, no, absolute, like the we don't say thank you enough. And then talking about like Tiger, obviously thankful that he's
comparing his grandpa to Tiger.
Oh my god, cutting onions, man.
I mean, it was a master class in public relations right there.
Oh, Colin Morikawa could go out next week, do something extremely controversial. I had something in my head, but I decided not to say it.
Good idea. You've already made one controversial take on this show today.
Yeah, you're gonna edit that out. You didn't. Nobody heard it. More lost content from us. But but yeah, Colin Morikawa could absolutely go out next week. Something bad happened. Him say something bad, but then people would just be like, "But remember last week?" And you'd be like, "He's got." You know how players, like, if you win a tournament, you get like so many tournaments for the rest of the year, like the next 2 years. He, after that post round interview, he's got like 2 years of like anything controversial. It's kind of null and void.
I don't know if cancel culture works like that, but if we cross that path, we'll have to clip this and let the internet know that they cannot cancel Colin Morikawa for 2 years at minimum.
Yeah, he's got the bright 3-2-21. He's got till 3-2-23. Bryce Hopwood, no cancel.
Stamp of approval.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, that's pretty much it. Are we done?
I mean, this Purdue-Wisconsin game's not over yet. I mean, how much longer do we have to sit here and talk to get our reactions to this game? I mean,
minutes in basketball time.
Right now they're talking about how Wisconsin hasn't won in Mackey Arena since 2014.
What a fateful year that was.
Dude, 41-4 at Mackey Arena. Last four meetings. 41-4 at Mackey against Wisconsin all time. And Purdue leads the all-time series 110-72.
I mean, Wisconsin is a football school, so
yeah,
and volleyball school.
And Purdue is a men's club ice hockey school.
I am mad that you are making fun of other sports that don't get the recognition.
I mean,
they should.
If you want to be all serious, let's go, Eric Hunter Jr. If you want to get into all seriousness, Purdue's really like a men's swim and dive school, specifically a diving school with two Olympic divers, two medal winning Olympic divers, and David Bodaya, and then a man with the greatest name on earth, Steele Johnson.
That's an interesting name.
Imagine growing up with the name Steele Johnson.
I hope he's well endowed.
The expectations you have to deal with for the rest of your life.
God, this Badgers defense is good, and then they just do this thing where they let the other team make 7 of 9 shots.
You mean when they let a 7-3 freshman just...
How is that not a fucking foul? How is him not putting his shoulder down and moving? Okay, that was a foul.
All right. We don't want to give you play-by-play. We're just stalling at this point, talking about Steele Johnsons and whatnot. That's going to be it for this week's episode of Lecture Hall. If you're, you know, feeling the golf vibe, maybe you can responsibly go over to bosr.com/studentunionsports and place a couple responsible bets. I mean, there's a favorite of ours, Jordan Spieth. He's in the field this week at the Arnold Palmer. You might want to get a little responsible sweet action on Jordan Spieth. Little top 10 finish, maybe.
Little sweet action. Little sweet.
Go to bosr.com/studentunionsports for all your betting needs, and you can take those winnings over to gibbsgrooming.com and then save a little money. Take that money you earned, then save a little of it at gibbsgrooming.com. Use code HALL15 to get 15% off your order. I forgot to read a review this week, and I'm not going to cancel my stream to go look one up. So that's going to be it for this week's show. Class is dismissed.
Deuces.